Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, December 16th. One of the nominees announced for the Biden cabinet yesterday made me scratch my head at first, like, why does that person line up with that job? By now, I'm starting to get it, but my next guest will help explain it to me as well as to you. It's the nomination of Pete Buttigieg to be transportation secretary. If we in the big cities think of transportation as running gigantic mass transit systems like the MTA or NJ Transit or the BART system in the San Francisco Bay Area, why pick the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, population barely 100,000, with the closest subway stop 100 miles away in Chicago? I think the answer in a word is climate. But here to tell us more is Jeanette Sadiq Khan, who some of you will remember as the visionary New York City Transportation Commissioner under Mayor Michael Bloomberg. She now works with his company, Bloomberg Associates, where she works with mayors around the world to reimagine and redesign their cities. She's also the chair of the National Association of City Transportation Officials. She is author of the book Street Fight, Handbook for an Urban Revolution. And yes, it is about transportation. And she used to be deputy administrator of the Federal Transit Administration, the FTA, so she knows that branch of federal transportation policymaking from the inside. Frankly, I wondered if Jeanette Sadiq Khan might become Biden's transportation secretary. So I guess not. But she's here to talk about the nomination of Pete Buttigieg. Hi, Jeanette. And of course, I remember when you used to come on as the New York City Transportation Commissioner. So welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, it's great to be back with you today.
So do you get this nomination?
I do. You know, when you think about the president-elect, you know, Biden has been loud and proud about his support for transit. And, you know, he said he'd be the Amtrak president and going to, you know, fast track infrastructure spending in 2021. And I think it's telling that Mayor Buttigieg is his pick for transportation secretary. You know, there are a lot of hot takes out there about why and is this a good thing. But I'm very bullish on him. And I don't think you can underestimate, you know, what a smart, you know, politically experienced mayor can do. And I think his best point of entry actually is that he's a mayor of an American town. Hmm. You know, I worked for mayors, you know, and I have a soft spot for mayors. But I do think that being a mayor gives you a really unique perspective on how government can work for people at the street level and, you know, experience the issues that maybe others underestimate.
Even a mayor of only 100,000 people with no subway system?
Well, I think it's also interesting that he, you know, there's no central casting ideal for transportation secretaries. You know, I don't remember any, you know, deep dives about previous secretaries. You know, many of them in the past have not held elected office and really didn't have any transportation background. I mean, Elaine Chao is a secretary. She had a lot of different jobs in Washington, including labor. Mary Peters, you know, was from Arizona running highways. Ray LaHood was a Republican congressman, you know, so the position has had a variety of people from all walks of life, you know, running it. And I think he's smart and he had a fantastic platform when he was running for president, one of the most detailed transportation platforms of any candidate out there. So, you know, I think there's a lot going for him. And, you know, transportation isn't just about cars and trucks and things that go. It's about transit and sustainability and climate change and access to opportunity and really it's a form of justice. And, you know, when Mayor Pete, when he was mayor of South Bend, he, you know, had these complete streets programs to enhance walking and biking. You know, he put in parking minimums, he rezoned to increase housing and advocated for rail. So I think there's a strong background there of the kind of priorities that we need to see at a national level.
The New York Times article on his nomination says the transportation department under Biden is expected to play a newly climate-centric role because of the agency's authority to regulate vehicle emissions, the leading source of climate-warming pollution in the United States, to encourage electric vehicles and to provide funding for mass transit. And that's interesting because I might have thought those things would be for the energy secretary or the EPA administrator or someone like that. But the Federal Transportation Department can become a climate-focused agency?
Oh, yeah. I mean, transportation policy is climate policy. You know, it's economic policy. You know, it's the foundation of all of our conversations about race and equity and access to opportunity. So that I think it's critical, and I think it's wonderful to see that that connection is being made at the national level, because that's what it's going to take to move forward. They're, you know, different sides of the same coin. And, you know, transportation in 2021 isn't just a mobility issue. It is an issue of national economic urgency. And, you know, our recovery depends on the right response. And there's no recovery if transit fails and people drive to work, which, you know, if we don't get this right, we're just going to add a mobility crisis to the health and economic and racial justice crises that we're facing now.
The other related nomination that got announced yesterday is former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm for Energy Secretary. I imagine any governor of Michigan knows something about the auto industry, and that, of course, is related to climate change. Do you like that pick?
Yeah, I think what I'm very excited about is this looking at these issues through a single lens, and that we are not going to address the climate crisis if we don't bring all parties to the table. And, you know, I think having somebody that gets the need to get to net zero and achieve the climate benchmarks that we're looking to get done, you have to have somebody that knows how to get that done. And so she's got a background in dealing with the auto industry. But I think, you know, what we need to do is have a kind of transportation policy that doesn't incentivize, you know, driving. You know, if you have no choice but to drive everywhere, you're never going to get to zero. You're never going to get to the climate, you know, goals that we need to achieve. And, you know, we need incentives to electrify the transportation network and create transit-oriented communities. We don't have to drive for every trip. And so I think, you know, matching transportation and energy and housing is going to be the path forward in 2021 and beyond.
Dan in Flatbush, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dan.
Hey, good morning. So I just wanted to mention this incident from 2016, I believe, in South Bend when Pete was mayor. He made the decision to have a traffic light removed from an intersection where a public bus stop was that students use. And this resulted in the death of a 11-year-old black child. And when confronted about this, Pete blamed the kid for his death, for darting across the street, in his words. And I just think this is really pertinent because this was a decision that from my understanding was informed by like a consultant sort of position. Like, and I think that that's emblematic of Pete's like larger political personality. He's like a consultant class kind of miracle whip dude. And I just, you know, I don't see how he has no experience for this position. I just don't get it. And it just seems like very swampy to me.
Dan, thank you. He did have the reputation of being one of the largest generators when he was running for president in the primaries of corporate donations, of big money donations. And are you familiar with the incident that the caller brings up, Jeanette?
No, I don't know the specifics of that. The piece that I've been looking at on his background is what he's done. And I don't take away from, by the way, the seriousness of what the caller just mentioned. You know, that is tragic, as every, you know, death on our streets and preventable deaths certainly are. But one of the things that I think was strong about his background in South Bend was this focus on complete streets and his focus on connecting low-income workers, you know, with jobs using rideshare. And I think if you take a look at his presidential platform, he was the only candidate to call for, you know, a nationwide Vision Zero policy. And, you know, even, you know, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren didn't even touch on this kind of stuff. So, you know, he talked about transit investment and state of good repair. We've really got a ticking time bomb when it comes to a sort of backlogs, maintenance backlogs in all arenas of infrastructure. So, but I'm not here to comment on that specific information. I really haven't heard this, but we're really looking at what does his background look like and what are some of the policies that he would look to translate as secretary for President Biden.
Let's take another phone call and another critic, I think. Mary in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm going to make this short and sweet. I'm a black woman and I'm gay and I'm older. And I don't think that Buttigieg should be nominated for this position. I actually don't trust him, all right? I don't trust him. I feel that he's being nominated because he's a gay white guy, and they're trying to make it look diverse. I don't believe that he even understands racism. He was in the military, which is actually the largest polluter on the planet. The United States military is the largest polluter on Earth, and he worked for them. This guy doesn't understand what's going on. So that's all I have to say, and I'm, as I said, I'm not going to make
right.
Let me
follow up with you on one thing that you said, because I think a lot of the analysis is that this is in part about cabinet diversity in the environmental area, and that they want a person of color at EPA, reportedly, who knows environmental justice as well as technical emission standards and things like that.
Yeah.
And Buttigieg also makes history as the first openly gay member of a presidential cabinet. So there are those elements that they hope work together to make a good whole. Not good enough for you?
No. I have known so many gay, racist, white guys, okay? Many. So being gay really doesn't mean anything when it comes to these other things like racism, sexism, okay? Mm-hmm. It doesn't follow through. And I don't see, other than he's fluid, the man has a silk tongue, and that's what gets him through. He's well-educated, and he's very convincing, and I don't trust him at all. I don't think he knows what he's doing. I don't think he has real experience in life with people and their situations, and he just shouldn't be in that office.
Mary, thank you very much. I'm going to take a caller next who wants to pivot in our remaining minutes. I was going to make this pivot, too, to how New York City is doing, since you were the former New York City Transportation Commissioner, Jeanette, in the pandemic. And under de Blasio in general, I'm going to let Adam on the Upper West Side generate this. Adam, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi. Jeanette Sadeq Khan is in part my hero every time I hop on a bike, because she was such a pioneer and leader in rolling out bike lanes across the city. And Brian Lehrer just talked about this really recently. Apparently during pandemic, this is how I learned it, Paris has rolled out 400 miles of bike lanes, and, you know, we're barely doing anything. And I was wondering, you know, what she can say about where we are on that and why are we doing nothing comparable to that.
Jeanette, you have a comment? New York, 19 miles, I think, is the number of bike lanes. Paris, in the hundreds. As a specific response to the pandemic.
Well, it and I really appreciate the caller's comment, so thank you for that. I think it's been really exciting to see what cities have done during the pandemic to transform their streets, to, you know, make it easier for people to get around, safer for people to get around and access opportunities. And whether it's Paris or London or Milan or Barcelona, it's been exciting. Everybody's following the same kind of playbook. And, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, people thought that the future of transportation and the next thing to do was to build, you know, we were going to have like flying cars and e-hails and all of that. And it's been interesting to see that everybody, the first thing that successful mayors did was open their streets to make it easier for walking and biking and the like. And I think that it's inspiring to see what Mayor Hidalgo did in Paris and what Mayor Sadiq Khan is doing and Mayor Saul is doing. And, you know, in New York, I think it's been interesting to see, perhaps not as much on the bike lane program, but the open restaurants, you know, having 10,500 restaurants certified for outdoor dining using 15,000 parking spaces just shows you what the potential is that's been hidden in plain sight. And so this crisis, I think, is a huge opportunity, and we shouldn't be bound by the timeline of the crisis. We should be looking long term and thinking about, you know, what we need for the recovery and to get ready for the next crisis. And we've been through so much in New York City in just a generation. You know, you think about 9/11 and the blackouts and Sandy, you know, and now with the pandemic in 2020. And, you know, we always needed our streets, and that's never been made, you know, more clear. So I think the other piece to the caller's point is, you know, it's interesting to see how all the mayoral candidates are talking about ways to build on, you know, the legacy certainly started under, you know, Mayor Bloomberg with the protected bike lanes and the bus lanes and, you know, following up on the good work that Polly Trottenberg did. So I think it's going to be important to track candidates to see that their vision is there for what we can do to make the next generation of bike lanes and bus lanes happen. So look forward to hearing more on that.
So last question. What about the large majority of America where transportation by car is still the norm? I think a third, I saw this stat somewhere and it blew my mind, but then when you think about it, it kind of makes sense. A third of all the Americans who take mass transit to work do so in New York. Most of the country really is different, and a lot of it doesn't have that option even. So should Biden and whoever he appoints in whatever environment-related positions, transportation-related positions, be making life harder for drivers who are not in Manhattan and Brooklyn? I mean, I remember when you used to come on the show as transportation commissioner, and we would get the hate calls from people saying, why do you hate cars? Why do you hate drivers? Why are you discriminating against me? I need to drive. I'm a working class person. The subway doesn't go where I need to go, whatever it is. Even New Jersey is famous for car dependent, for being car dependent in large measure because the mass transit options aren't there. So should the Biden administration also make it easier for drivers in some way or just make it harder for drivers?
Well, you know, as you know, we had lots of callers, as you say all sorts of things on your show. And, you know, it's not about being anti-car. It's about being pro-choices. And transit should never be politicized. The MTA carried, you know, 9 million people, 9 million Americans daily across its divisions during better times. And not just any 9 million people. You know, it's not just New York swagger that our workforce is the core of the national economy. I mean, New York accounts for 10% of national GDP. So as New York City goes, so goes the nation. It's in the nation's interest that New York City transit work. And our buses and trains are used by Americans, by essential workers, and people who don't own cars. And that's a majority of commuters in New York City. You know, 65% of essential workers take transit. But it's also used by bikers and lawyers, the whole world of people who keep the city and this whole nation moving. That's not how Washington looks at it. You know, as you point out, Brian, the MTA carries almost 40% of transit, you know, passengers in the United States, but it only got 14% of the funding in the CARES Act, you know, which is kind of heartbreaking. And, you know, the other piece that I think is interesting is, you know, the MTA alone carries three times the number of passengers as all of the nation's airlines do on a single day. You know, so we're not going to get by with the equivalent of ice cream money here. You know, we need a federal strategy on a national recovery level that's equivalent to what we did after the Depression. And I think we need a WPA for the MTA.
Jeanette Sadiq Khan, she was the transportation commissioner for New York City. under Mayor Bloomberg. She now is a principal at Bloomberg Associates, where she consults mayors around the world on transportation policy and related environmental policy. She's chair of the National Association of City Transportation Officials and author of the book Street Fight, Handbook for an Urban Revolution. Well, we'll see if the Pete Buttigieg nomination for transportation secretary goes through, and on a broader basis, what transportation and environment policy turn out to be under President Biden. Jeanette, thanks so much for coming on with us.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to be with you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.